Uh-oh. Okay, okay, nobody panic. Listen up, listen up. Everyone, follow me to the shelter. We've got enough food for 14 days. After that, we have a difficult conversation.
My bad. Space heater and fan were both on high, plugged into the same outlet, so.
It's saying the server went down. Does anybody know that password? Because otherwise we can't do any work.
Try password.
Nope.
Try 000000.
No.
Okay, now try 000001.
Okay, I'm not doing every number.
Wait, does anyone remember when it was set up?
It was like 8 years ago.
Lord of the Rings stuff? I don't know, I'm just trying to think of things that were happening at the time.
Everyone was getting their driver's license.
Why don't we just call the IT guy who set it up? What's the name of the guy in the glasses again?
Okay, moving backwards, our IT guys have been. Glasses, turban, ear hair, fatty 3, shorts, fatty 2, lozenge, and fatso. I think lozenge is the one who installed it.
I got it. Try,
You know what? It made me laugh when I heard it, but Pam got really offended.
Ooh, big boobs.
Drama queen.
Nosy.
You're typing big boobs?
I'm trying everything.
Try big boobs with a Z.
That's the password. We're in.
All right.
Wow. Yes.
The important thing is, this kept us secure, people.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 35, regular season. It's Ethan and Weiss coming at you once again. We are ready for week one against Dallas. Before we get started, you know the drill, housekeeping, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Go subscribe to us on iTunes. We're on Audio Boom. We're on Google Play. We're on Stitcher Radio. You have no excuse not to be subscribed. Go follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Go follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Go follow the blog at GothamSN. That pretty much does it. If you're in the fantasy league, get ready. Remember to set your lineups. Other than that, Weiss, how we living?
Ethan, how are you? It's been a couple weeks since we did this.
Yeah, it's been interesting. We have a lot to get into. Yes. I think since we last podcasted, the Giants had their final 53 come out. A bunch of updates on the Odell injury. And Craig Carton got arrested, but we're going to save that for the end of the show, as we always do, the miscellaneous section. Let's get into, just real quick, final 53. Let's talk roster. I'll let you go first, because to be quite honest, there weren't that many surprises for me. Maybe Travis Rudolph, maybe Bisnawati, considering he was a pick. But at the end of the day, I think, no one's really outraged or surprised by any of the decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to start this segment off by saying I'm not surprised by any of this. I think behind the scenes in our little quick rundown, I put surprises only because I thought maybe you had a surprise.
No,
it's nothing for me. I mean, it's basically what I expected. I mean, if you want to look for a surprise, maybe having a fullback plus 5 tight ends.
Yep.
But other than that, I mean, happy for Matt Lacoste.
Me too.
He's had a rough couple of years, but, you know, he made the roster. Shane Smith, great, great story. If you don't know the background about that, I suggest everyone look it up. Not really surprised by Travis Rudolph. I know he's a fan favorite, but, you know, I think Roger Lewis and Dwayne Harris are special teams specialists, and I don't think Rudolph did enough to prove that on special teams. But other than that, I mean, you and I both expected Geno to win the backup job. Obviously, one thing to be happy about is I think the Giants came into the summer with a lot of uncertainty at the kicker position, and I think they walked into the fall with what looks to be the kicker of the present and the future. So that's happy for Aldrick Rojas on that, but not really much surprises on my end.
Yeah, no, you hit on a lot of good points. The kicking battle, we'll have Aldrick for my mouth to God's ears for the next 5 to 10 years, hopefully. The Giants have had a number of young kickers that they've shown the door, have gone on to have successful careers, namely McManus in Denver. On the defensive side of the ball, Dante Dion, Michael Hunter has NFL experience, so there you go. In regards to Travis Rudolph, who I brought up earlier, it sucks. He was a fan favorite. Another great story. You mentioned with Shane Smith, he had a great story. Travis Rudolph, another great story. there's just no room. You know, if even if Odell misses time, it's not going to be a guy like Travis Rudolph filling in on the outside. It's going to be someone like Roger Lewis with Sterling Shepard in the slot. And they plan to use Engram as a receiver, especially, you know, up the middle of the field. There just wasn't enough room. You mentioned special teams as well. So, you know, at the end of the day, it sucks. But, you know, what are you going to do? So I think that's about it for final 53.
The good thing was they got Rudolph onto the practice
squad. Right, exactly. They snuck him onto the practice squad. Did they also sneak Biz onto the practice squad?
Yep, they got Biz Nawadi on there as well.
So, you know, it's not the end of the road for these guys. It's just a numbers game, and the Giants are a very talented team right now. So, you know, the chances of a UDFA, you know, maybe Biz a little bit more surprising because Chad Wheeler made it over him.
Biz is a little bit more surprising because you never see the Giants part with the draft pick.
Exactly, so. Yeah, and that's what I was getting at. You know, sixth-round pick, okay, whatever, interesting. Sort of like a good change of pace to see Reese willing to, I mean, I know he made the practice squad, but sort of admit, all right, this isn't working out. Let's move on right away. Mm-hmm. Sort of refreshing.
Yeah, and Chad Wheeler earned it. I mean, he was much better than Biz Nawadi throughout the preseason.
Definitely. Let's get into week one.
All right.
Finally Dallas, here. Prime time. The big talk, the Odell injury. So what are your thoughts on the injury? A lot of news coming out that he might not even play. I'm of the opinion that he is 100% playing. I don't think there's a chance that he misses this game. And, you know, if he does, it's going to be real interesting because I think we're going to see a lot of 12 personnel, seeing them utilize the two tight end sets with Engram and Ellison to sort of offset the loss of Odell.
You know, I mean, you and I are basically, well, for the most part, thinking alike. For starters, when it comes to Odell, it is not a sure thing, in my opinion. Listen, the guy hasn't even started cutting yet. Now, unless there's some mastermind, you know, Ben McAdoo has this mastermind of him, you know, trying to underplay Beckham and probably him not kind of fool Dallas with possibly Odell not playing. I find a hard time believing, you know, we see 13 out there. Listen, he hasn't practiced in going, 2 weeks? I know people brought up, you know, last season and the year before that with Odell suffering some minor injuries and then not practicing throughout the week, but still being able to play. I think this is different. I think, you know, all indications are that Odell suffered a high ankle sprain against Cleveland, and it's a tough injury to overcome. I know people talk about, well, he's going to suit up and be a decoy, and that's great and all. But listen, it's week one. I know it's a huge game against Dallas. I know Odell wants to probably be out there. But you gotta protect yourself, and I think the Giants are really, really, really preparing for this game where 13 is not going to be there. And replacing him, I think this is where I agree with you. I think it's not going to be Roger Lewis or Tavares King for the most part. I think it's going to be Red Ellison. I think it's going to be Shane Vereen. I think it's going to be being able to establish a run game. I think that's the way they're going to be able to beat Dallas with the 12 personnel set and kind of playing with two tight ends.
I really don't see a world, and maybe I'm just being really naive here, where Odell doesn't just suit up even as a decoy. I think having him out there, at least in limited snaps, is going to be more valuable than having someone like Roger Lewis out there. Because if he isn't there, they know that Roger Lewis isn't someone who's going to take over a game, that the Giants are going to try to commit to the run. They're going to start using the tight ends. So it's just really hard for me to picture him not being out there. I know he hasn't started cutting yet, but he's been running straight line. And, you know, he's a guy who, listen, he's going into his fourth year. He's not someone who needs to practice or needs to learn the playbook or anything like that. So I think that if he can muster the pain and the medical staff determines that, you know, not much more injury can occur, then I don't see any reason why we wouldn't see him out there.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. You know, you want to see 13 out there, but I mean, it's tough. I mean, with all due respect, I think you might be a little naive with this one. I think there's a chance he could play, but I think there's also a good chance that he doesn't suit up Sunday.
All right, but so let's make a bet.
Sure. I'm not a betting man, but I'll bet with you.
All right, that's good. All right, so I'm on Odell plays. You're on Odell will not be suiting up week one.
I am right now 60-40 that Odell does not play Sunday.
Okay. So, well, okay. So, but this is the bet. I'm 100. You got to be 100 on your side.
I can't do that.
Come on.
I mean, listen, there is a chance he could play. And maybe if you talk to me for an hour, you could probably talk me into believing that he's going to play. But I just think, look, I mean, the guy has not practiced in 2 weeks.
If Odell plays, I get a soundbite of you saying Jerry Reese is not a good GM.
That's not going to happen. If you want me to lie, I can lie. But I'm not, I mean, I'll say that right now for you.
All right. Well, I think one thing that hasn't really been talked about is sort of the irony of the situation where we've been going for a month plus of a 6-game suspension for Zeke.
Yes.
And now it's going to be Odell is the one who's going to be missing week one. I know Zeke's suspension's upheld and it starts week two, but you know, sort of the reversal of they're now going to have their superstar. We're not going to have ours.
Well, the NFL, I don't know how that makes any sense to me.
I think it's a money grab. I didn't read into any of the legalese or anything. It seems to me like a money grab.
Well, regardless how you feel about Ezekiel's suspension, and we can sit here and debate that for hours, whether he should or not be suspended. But if the suspension is upheld, how does he get to play week one? That just doesn't make any sense to me. But listen, he's going to be out there. It is what it is. But
no, but again, I'm not worried.
No, not at all.
There's not a single running back in the NFL that worries me against this defensive front. There isn't. Yeah, and everyone should think the same.
I mean, of course, especially from what we saw last season. The Giants are built to beat the Cowboys if they play to their full potential. They're built that way. They were bought that way with all those big money free agents. Those guys were brought in here to beat Dallas and that offensive line. And I have the utmost confidence with or without Zeke about the Giants winning this game.
Yeah, 100%. And sort of transitioning here, you say the Giants are built to beat Dallas. That's more true this year than it was last year. And I say that because we really don't know who the Cowboys cornerbacks are. And apparently neither does Ben McAdoo. I'll see if we can get the soundtrack spliced in here. Ben McAdoo is basically like, yeah, I don't really know who's back there. And I don't know if that was just Ben being Ben or if that was McAdoo's version of smack talk. Brandon Marshall lining up as the wide receiver one and then Shep in the slot. With Engram, I don't see any way. If the offensive line can keep Eli Manning up for 2 to 3 seconds, I see no way that this Dallas defense can stop the Giants. None. Even without Odell.
I'm with you. I mean, obviously the Rob Marinelli factor is in there too because he tends to get the most out of his players.
Yep.
But even he was like, there's a lot of uncertainty with this defense. He came out and said it today. In regards to the whole Ben McAdoo trash talk, he said it made a comment about Zeke as well with the whole it doesn't matter who's the running back if there's nowhere to run,
right,
or something along that sorts. But they are built to beat this team. When you look up front, that's where they're built to stop the run, and I think that's what they're going to do. I think if you want to beat the Cowboys, first and foremost, and this is if Zeke's there or not there, they're going to run the football behind that offensive line.
Yep, one of the most talented in the league.
Yep. And I think they could take a step back this year, but it won't be that big of a step back. But you got to stop the run, and you got to make Dak Prescott beat you. And if he beats you, you put your head down and you accept. But you can't let them be able to establish the run, control the tempo, and then have Dak, who shows that he can be a good quarterback, can beat you. So I think for the most part, with Zeke out there, I think the Giants know what they have to do. And if he wasn't out there, they know what they have to do. So it's not like there's two separate game plans here. The game plan is always stop the run and, make the Cowboys beat you through the air.
Yep. And, I all through last year, and you could chalk it up to my Giants bias, there were only one or two moments where I was truly impressed with Dak last year, because I'm under the impression that, I could make some of those throws with how much time he has behind that offensive line. The thing that I want to bring up to you, and I feel like it's something that doesn't really get talked about that much, at least in the way that I'm about to pose the question to you. Mm-hmm. Jackrabbit versus Dez. Mm-hmm. What Jackrabbit did to Dez last year, locked him up, put him in Rikers, was unreal.
Yes.
And I think that it's just so unlikely that he repeats that performance. Now, I'm not saying Dez is going to go off, but think about how close the games between the Giants and Cowboys were at points last year. And, you know, all it takes is, you know, one red zone opportunity where Jack Rabbit slips up, or, you know, a 50 yard game from Dez instead of 7 yards and a fumble or whatever the stat line was. Do you think we see that the Jack Rabbit shutting him down again, or does he break a little more free? Because I'm under the impression a lot of Giants Twitter disagrees with me. I think Dez is a very talented receiver. He's not top three. He's not top five, but he is a very talented guy.
Yeah, he's an exceptional receiver. I mean, the guy had 15, 16 touchdowns in 2014. He is a playmaking receiver. The thing about it is, I think, you know, and I think Spagnuolo, if you listen to his press conference, they said, look, you're going to win some battles, you're going to lose some battles. But if you lose some, you got to make it up on the next player, the play after. So I think for the most part, the Giants secondary, which is extremely talented, they're going to have to throw different things at Dez, whether it's DRC or Eli Apple or Janoris Jenkins, who for the most part will see him. Could you expect a repeat performance from what we saw in week 14? Probably not. I think the way the game is right now, it's so much in favor of the receiver that it's so tough to actually shut a receiver down for an extended period of time.
Especially in this NFL passing league.
Right. But I think how you do that is you have to be able to get to the quarterback. Now, if they're able to get to the quarterback and create pressure, there might be times where Dez beats Janoris. But if the pocket collapses for Dak and he's not able to get the ball to Dez, you know, that's a win for the Giants defense. So individually, I don't know if he can do that, if Janoris can do that consistently. I don't think there's a lot of not any corners that can do that consistently over a 60-minute game. But collectively, if you're able to collapse the pocket and, you know, limit the time that Dak has to throw the ball, or if you're able to, you know, at times play great coverage on Dez Bryant, then you can win these battles. But you definitely I'm not going into this game thinking that, you know, Dez is going to have a catch for 8 yards. I think he's going to get his. He might have a touchdown. But for the most part, it's a collective unit thing. I think it's going to be done. If they're going to be able to beat this team, it's going to be collectively. It's not going to be just one person.
Yeah. And you bring up, you know, collapsing the pocket on Dak. You bring up a good point, because I feel like when people talk about the defensive line, they talk about, you know, obviously JPP and Olivier Vernon are very talented guys that can stop the run, that can rush the passer. Snacks, known for his run-stopping ability. I think there's a huge upgrade at that second defensive tackle spot from last year that not a lot of people are talking about. And that's both with Dalvin Tomlinson and Jay Bromley, who was just named the second starter. There's going to be more of a pass rush presence there now, because Hankins also more of a run stopper, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And it was one of the reasons the Giants had such a good run defense last year. But I think that if they can collapse the pocket from the inside, and I think they're going to be able to do it way better this year than last year, force Dak to make bad throws. And then again, I feel like not a lot of people are talking about him. Darian Thompson, he's going to be able to feast, because the Giants, you know, people talk about Jack Rabbit shutting down Dez, and people talk about Landon Collins being one of the most talented safeties. You have to love what you saw from Darian Thompson this preseason. And listen, the guy's going to have a lot of picks this year. So force the pressure, make the sophomore quarterback make a mistake, get the turnover. With or without Odell, I'm very confident. Let me get your score prediction here.
My prediction on this game?
Yeah.
Ooh, putting me on the spot. I think the Giants win this game. I'm not as confident, obviously, if Odell's not out there, but I think the Giants, their defense is just built, man. We talked about it throughout the show. They're built to beat this team. I think the Cowboys' offensive line, specifically the left guard, whether it's Jonathan Cooper, who, if you don't know, was a draft bust with Arizona, I think had a cup of coffee with New England and now in Dallas. You know, if he's the left guard, you know, he's a weak link. Or if it's Chaz Green, who was been with the Cowboys throughout his short career, but he's been dealing with injuries a lot. And then right tackle with L. Collins, he's had some ups, he's had some downs. And going up against JPP, I mean, I think that matchup favors JPP. So, you know, I think the Giants win this game. I think they win, you know, I'm going to say 24-21.
Okay, we have very similar scores.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a game-winning field goal by Rojas, but I think we could see some Eli magic in the fourth quarter, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I got 20-17. I think it's going to be relatively low scoring, especially if they don't have Odell. Obviously, Cowboys, known for establishing the run. Giants, very stout defense. If the Giants don't have Odell, expect to see more 12 personnel, two tight end sets. They're going to be running the ball. They're going to get Ellison involved. They're going to get Shane Smith involved, whether it be, you know, a couple of catches out of the backfield, which I think we'll see this season. I said it before, I said it again. McAdoo and McCarthy, they, you know, they work together. McCarthy liked to use the fullback and the big white tight ends in the short yardage situation. So keep an eye out for Shane Smith. I think it's going to be low scoring. I'm looking at the line right now. The over-under is 47.5. I think that's too high, but what do I know? So I'm going to go 2017 Giants, and that's my week one prediction.
Giants start 1-0 again.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'll be the fourth straight victory over Dallas.
Good. Let's keep it that way.
Let's see.
Let's move on, broader picture. You have here on the rundown season outlook. And I had a couple questions related to that, but I'll save that for the question section.
Sure.
Most important player on the offensive side of the ball and defensive side of the ball.
Go ahead with the offensive side. I think this one is fairly easy.
Okay. I don't think it is.
You don't think so?
I don't think it is. I think you could go a number of directions here.
For me, it's pretty simple. It's Eli and Odell.
Okay.
50-50. I'll give the nod to Eli because he's the quarterback, and if you lose him, I don't think Geno can carry you. If you lose Eli, then what this becomes is Geno has to be a game manager quarterback, and Geno, who is mistake prone, that'll be tough. And I'm not even going to touch on Davis Webb because I don't think he's ready. Although, can I give a shout out?
Yeah.
That was a great game-winning drive against New England.
Yes, it was.
In that fourth preseason game. If you didn't watch that preseason game, it was one of the most entertaining preseason games I've ever watched. But anyways, with that said, I still don't think he's ready for regular season game action. But I give the nod to Eli. It's the quarterback position. It's pretty easy to me. Although losing Odell will be pretty tough, too.
So you gave a 50-50, so I'm going to allow myself to do the same on the offensive side of the ball. I'm going to say 50-50, Ereck Flowers, Bobby Hart. I think this offense the question was the most important, not the best. And as bad as Ereck Flowers has been, and listen, everyone's chirping at me, Bobby Hart had an amazing preseason. Awesome. Let's see him do it against Von Miller and Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa in the regular season before you start, you know, going crazy here.
Well, Ereck Flowers didn't have an impressive preseason. Let's just get that over. Bobby Hart, okay, yeah, we could talk about that.
Yeah, no, we're on the same page about that. We don't, right?
Yes.
As bad as both of them were last year, and as bad as Ereck Flowers has been this preseason, it should say a lot that they both still have starting positions, because the Giants didn't go out there and bring in any veteran help, and the guys playing behind them, whether it's Chad Wheeler or they want to bring Fluker over to right tackle, those guys are worse. I'm not even asking for, I can't even say a moderate improvement. Be mediocre. If the tackles are mediocre, this Giants offense will be good. That is why I think that they're the most important. They're the bookends. The Giants are going to be facing some good defenses this season. If they can be mediocre, it'll be the key to the Giants offense throughout the course of the season. We know what Odell can do. We know what Eli's capable of. We need the improvement from those two. And that's why I think that their improvement is the most important part of the offense.
Yeah, I think we kind of looked at this question the wrong way. I sort of looked at it like,
well, that's what I'm saying. There are a lot of different interpretations for it.
But you're right. A lot hinges on those two. What about defensively? Who's the most important player?
Most important player defensively. Again, so many different ways that you can look at this. I'm stuck between JPP and Landon Collins. Because
I'm stuck between Harrison and Snacks Harrison and Landon Collins.
Because again, I think if JPP can get a few snaps off and Spags does a better job this year of rotating that defensive end spot to keep his players fresh, I think JPP is in for a monster season. Monster. I'm talking like 10-plus sacks, a number of run stops. He's going to have a great season. Collins, we know what he is. And I'm, you know, I say most important because I think if he goes down to injury, the Giants defense gets significantly worse.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on JPP. I think the one thing, if you look at the Giants schedule, they might not have good tackles, but for the most part, they don't face any really good offensive tackles this year. Offensive
right, line is exactly.
Outside of probably the teams in their own division. I mean, you know, Denver's offensive tackles are shaky. San Diego's are shaky. Detroit's are shaky. So if you look down that roster, there's a lot of shaky offensive lines the Giants are playing.
Yep.
And that could be in favor of the Giants.
Definitely. Okay. Next on season outlook. How can the Giants win it all? I'm going to let you start because I want to see how you sort of tackle this question before I give my answer.
The reason why we can legitimately talk about this is because the Giants are a really talented football team.
Absolutely.
Top to bottom.
Absolutely.
They have a top five defense. They are just immensely talented in terms of weapons on offense. When you look at it top to bottom, they have size. They have speed. They have strength. I mean, they have it all. Obviously, the biggest question mark for this team is the offensive line.
Yep.
And when you look around the league, a lot of the Super Bowl contenders, specifically in the NFC with Seattle, I compare Seattle and the Giants a lot because I think Seattle has weaknesses on the offensive line, but their defense is so strong and they have such a good home field advantage. And obviously, you know, Russell Wilson is sort of a different type of player, a different type of quarterback than Eli Manning, but the weaknesses and the strengths are sort of similar with those two teams. And if you're going to put Seattle up there, you got to put the Giants up there as well. So for this team to win it all, they're going to have to need the following three things. The defense to not lose a beat. They cannot take a step back. They might not need to take a step forward, but they don't need to take a step back. Secondly is injuries. They're going to have some luck again with injuries. And we knock on wood, but hopefully they can stay healthy throughout the season. And the third is limited liabilities. Obviously, every team has weaknesses. Even defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots have weaknesses. No team is perfect. But you have to limit your liabilities. And obviously, when you think of Giants and you think of liabilities, you think of the offensive line. You think of Eric Flowers. You think of Bobby Hart. You think of John Jerry. They're going to have to limit the liabilities, meaning every game can't be the same issues or the same liabilities for the Giants. Eric Flowers might have a bad game, might have two bad games, but he has to be able to be not a liability. He's going to have to be able to have better days than bad days, more better days than bad days. And if he does that, I think this Giant team is built to win anywhere against any team. And if you want a fourth in there, and it kind of piggybacks off the offensive line, but when you have a 36-year-old quarterback, you're going to need to be able to establish a running game. And Paul Perkins, second-year guy, still some inexperience there. You got Orleans Darkwa. You got Wayne Gallman. You got Shane Vereen. They're going to have to be able to establish some sort of running game for this team to be able to win in certain conditions where throwing the football, which is this team's strength, is tough. So if they're able to limit their liabilities, have luck when it comes to injuries, and their defense not take a step back, I think you got to like the Giants' chances in playing in the Super Bowl in February.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you said. I think the run game is super important. You know, it's going to be Paul Perkins' backfield to lose, in my opinion. We saw what he was able to do when he received a decent number of snaps last year. He was very effective. And I think the Giants' strategy, and we saw it last year, we saw it against Dallas, is essentially go up on these teams and then run them into the ground. Run it down their throats, tire the defenses out, take time off the clock. And I think that with the addition of Rhett Ellison, Paul Perkins second year, Shane Smith on the roster too, I think they're going to be able to really do that. So I'm going to put the run game as my number one. Two is just going to be health. Eli goes down, the season's over. Odell goes down long term, I think season's over. You got to get guys like Landon Collins down, season over. So health is going to be the second one. And that's, to be very honest, it's unpredictable. So it's that one's out of their hands. I think those are the two for me. And I'm going to leave it at that. If they can stay healthy and establish a run game, you know, there's no reason. You said it. Defense was top five last year. The offense was so average that if they're just a little bit better than last year, this team's going to be able to make a run.
See, I think they're going to have to be a lot better. They didn't score 30 points last season.
That's true. But if you look at where they finished, what, like 15th, 16th in the league last year in scoring? You know, they weren't terrible. They just could have been a lot better. And I think with the weapons that they had, with the, that they received now in this offseason, Marshall, Ellison, I think they're going to be a lot better. Engram in the draft, you know, it's not going to be, you're not going to need a huge step. You're not going to need to be a top five. I'd argue you don't even need to be top 10. This defense is that good.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think with sort of the emergence of B.J. Goodson, who I love watching, I mean, you just watch him in the preseason, it's so much fun. I think, you know, we talked about it a couple episodes ago about that next step. You know, is that next step there? And is that three down middle linebacker on the roster? And if B.J. Goodson is that guy, you got to think this team is going to take that, this defense is going to take that next step and sort of cement itself as possibly the best defense in pro football.
Yeah, absolutely. Season prediction.
They won 11 games last year. I think they face a little bit tougher schedule this year. I'm going to say 10-6. And I think 10-6 will be enough to win the division, especially if Ezekiel Elliott ends up serving that six-game suspension. What's going to be tricky is, and we talked about it, is health and the ability to limit liabilities as a whole on this team. They're going to be facing, as it's been said over and over again, they're going to be facing a lot of good pass-rushing teams. It's a tough schedule. You're facing the NFC West and the AFC West, a lot of traveling. I think they go 10-6. I think they win the division. I think they get the number three seed in the NFC in the NFC playoffs. And I think I could see the Giants potentially getting to the NFC championship game. But ultimately, I think the Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks, in my opinion, will knock them off. When you look at what Seattle did adding Sheldon Richardson, that is just unbelievable. He's a great player. You might not like him, but he is a good, great football player, and you add it to that already stacked defense. I think, you know, sort of the same thing with the Giants about the offensive line. If the offensive line can be sort of adequate for Seattle, I think they're going to be win the Super Bowl, man. I think they're going to be there in February again. I mean, they built a great team.
Yeah, their defense is insane with Richardson. I'm going to go 11-5. Not going to give a full spiel. They went 11-5 last year. The team only got better. I know the schedule is going to be a bit harder this year, but 11-5 is going to be my my preseason prediction.
How far do they go?
How far do they 11, go?
11-5 got them a first round exit last year.
Yeah, no, I'm sort of on your page. I think NFC Championship game. Don't know who's going to be there to knock them off, but I think this team is built to make a run.
Will you be satisfied with the playoff appearance and elimination in the first game?
No.
Me neither. I think we're past it.
Yeah,
there's
absolutely.
There's too much talent.
Way too
obviously,
much.
Obviously, you know, to say, you know, it's Super Bowl or bust, obviously that's always the case. But realistic expectations, look, make the playoffs, win a playoff game, and then we can talk about whether they met expectations or not.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get to some questions. From Andrew, if the running game is weak going into week four, do you trade for Jeremy Hill? No.
No, that doesn't help. If the running game is weak, I'm going to go out on the limb, on a pretty limb, and say it's probably because of the offensive line.
Yeah. It's not going to be because of Paul Perkins or Orleans Darkwad. It's going to be the offensive line. And if you follow me on Twitter, if you've been listening to the podcast at all, you know I'm very anti paying anything for a running back, because I think that they can be a dime a dozen, and you can really, you know, shot bottom of the barrel and still come away with a productive player. So there's no point in giving up any asset, especially for a guy like Jeremy Hill.
No, I don't think he's the answer to trade for, to fix your running game. I don't think if the team trades for Jeremy Hill, are you confident about the running game more so than if they didn't trade for Jeremy Hill? Probably not.
Right. The roster surrounds from AJ. The roster surrounding Eli Manning is the best since 2008. Do you think he will be a candidate for MVP this season? No.
No.
There's just too many talented guys in the league for Eli to win MVP at this point. I mean, he would need to put up like 5,000 yards, 40 touchdowns, and, you know, basically make the team go 13-3.
I think realistically for Eli Manning to get in the MVP discussion, he would need to throw over 35 touchdowns, under 10 interceptions, 4,500 yards, more than 4,500 yards, and the Giants probably finish in the top two in the NFC.
Yeah, yeah, which I just don't see happening. That's it. That's all it is. Who does the game ball go to on Sunday? That's a really good question. Who's your answer?
I'm going to say it goes to Jason Pierre-Paul.
JPP?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say Darian Thompson. I'm really high on him. I think he gets his first NFL interception against Dak.
He played really well in week one last year.
Yeah, like really well.
If you rank rookie performances last year in week one between the Cowboys and the Giants, there was a lot of rookies on the field. You can make a case that Darian Thompson played better than Ezekiel Elliott in his first game.
Yeah.
And he looked that well playing safety. He played really, really well.
What defensive player has the best chance to break out like Landon did last year?
I don't think anyone is going to break out like Landon Collins did last year.
Correct.
I mean, let's be real here. Landon Collins went from a guy that we thought was so limited to what he can do to just completely blowing everything out of the waters. I know the easy answer here is Eli Apple.
Yep, exactly.
I'm not taking anything away. I think Eli Apple takes the next step and becomes better than what he was last year. But nobody takes a Landon Collins step forward.
Yeah, there's no one that really fits that profile other than Apple. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
All right. I got one more question. Let me pull it up. Sup, bitch. This was directed towards me from Mike. Question for the podcast. Do you play Odell week one or not risk it? I gave my opinion earlier in the show. You still sticking with your guns? Wouldn't play him?
Listen, if he hasn't been cleared to cut yet, then he's probably not worth being a decoy on Sunday. That's all I'm going to say.
All right. That works for me. That's the end of the football portion. What did we say we were going to name this segment at the end when we just talk nonsense?
Wasn't it Stroll Around the League or something?
No, it was. I feel like I made a pun with your name, but I don't remember what it was. Anyway, let's do it. What do you want to talk about? I see we got Michael Bennett and Craig Carton on the list.
I mean, listen, it's the big story. What happened with Michael Bennett?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's pretty. Listen, it's a touchy subject to touch on, but when it's constantly happening, you know, it's really, really tough to avoid. What happened to Michael Bennett was, you know, pretty much what a majority of the people in America face. Obviously, we don't know the facts, and it's not right to paint a picture here that's not factual. But, you know, if what Michael Bennett says happened to him, then it's sad, man. And that's exactly why these guys protest. It's exactly why they kneel for the national anthem. And I think instead of, at some point, I wish we can start discussing the real issues than just A, telling people it's wrong to protest for the way they're protesting, and two, just completely ignore what they're protesting about. But I'm happy nothing serious happened to Michael Bennett, and he's a good player.
Yeah, I think I have a slightly different take than you here. I mean, I've been very vocal in my support for Colin Kaepernick. Obviously very anti-police brutality, but you can separate, you know, you can look at these situations on a case by case basis.
Absolutely.
And it's something that I've done since the beginning, from Trayvon Martin to, you know, all the way up until this Michael Bennett situation. And I'm obviously going to do a bit more research into it, but there's essentially like zero evidence. And I even saw a video that didn't look that bad. He obviously was, you know, cuffed and put on the ground, but there seems to have been a lot, I'll say a decent amount of exaggeration here. And I'm going to wait for more facts and hopefully some more video evidence to come out before making a final decision on this, because, you know, it's Twitter. It's 140 characters. It's the world we live in. People make snap judgments and snap accusations. And I'm guilty of it myself sometimes. But I want to wait to see if there's police body cam video or if there is some pedestrian video that I didn't see, because the Las Vegas Police Department is already striking back and saying that, you know, that these accusations are outrageous. The Las Vegas Police Department are requesting Goodell to do an investigation into it. So listen, it's something that obviously happens all around the country, and we've seen it in the last few years. Again, case by case basis, and I just want to see if some more evidence comes out before making a decision.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you have to, you can't just, I want to say it, but I don't want to offend anybody. You don't want to pick a side just because of past issues.
Well, and that's the thing, and that's like why this is one of the reasons I hate partisan politics, is because you shouldn't just side with a side because of one issue, right? You should be able to take every issue individually, look at it, take the facts, and come to your own conclusion. So, and it goes as micro as this, where you're looking at one specific issue in a broader problem that we face in America. So, you know, at the end of the day, listen, people are going to be offended. I've had so many people tweet at me unhappy with my opinion on Colin Kaepernick. And you know what? I don't give a shit. Again, case by case basis.
Yeah, you know, it's case by case. You bring it, you say it perfectly. It's okay to believe that what happened in Ferguson, Missouri might be different than what happened with Eric Garner in Staten Island, New York. Even though the outcome was unfortunately the same.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're saying the same thing here. Case by case basis. You can look at each situation and analyze it.
So with Michael Bennett, even though he is a great player and he has been an advocate of this stuff, you don't want to rush to judgment. At the same time, you know, you have to wait for the facts, but it's just, it's such a touchy subject, and we put it down to cover it because, you know, it's an NFL player and it happened, and, you know, it's such a big topic of discussion. But sometimes we have to just wait for more facts before we jump into it. And sometimes facts don't come. We don't get the facts.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're left picking and choosing. But I don't think we should pick and choose more so than we should come to the table and actually talk about, okay, what is making you feel uncomfortable about this? What made Michael Bennett feel the way Michael Bennett felt? You know, like,
that's like a very broad problem that we face in America today, and especially in this media age, where, again, everything is so snap judgment. People just have an opinion, and that's going to be their opinion. There's rarely any dialogue or any discussion about, you know, why people feel that way, what makes people believe that way. And that's unfortunately the 140 character world we live in.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about Kaepernick in this. There's a lot of things I agree and I support Colin Kaepernick on, including protesting the national anthem. But I can't sit up here and justify the tweet of his girlfriend basically, you know, calling Ray Lewis and the owner of the Ravens sort of like a slave.
Right.
And Uncle Tom mentality. I can't do that because, you know, even though we can laugh at it and it was funny, and, you know, even though Ray Lewis said some weird things, you can't really do that. You can't really insult people like that. And in another term, you know, with Colin Kaepernick, you can't justify wearing pick socks. Now, I've tried to understand the whole Fidel Castro thing, but I sort of need more information about that before I you know, comment on it, because when you talk about when the whole Fidel Castro thing happened, there was a lot of opinions about the situation, and I would much rather research what exactly was on that shirt before I actually rush to judgment. And I'm not a, you know, supporter of Fidel Castro nor a sympathizer of it.
Right. No, that's good. We seem to, you know, be on the same page, work through that one.
Now let's get to the real criminal, shall we?
My man, Pots and Pans, or should I say Pots and Scams. Craigie. When this news broke, obviously very surprised. When I read on justice.gov the details,
I read that too.
Holy shit.
At what paragraph did you say that? After the first paragraph, I was like, oh, he is so fucked.
Yeah, he's fucked. I think I got to a point, and I'm scrolling through to see if I can find it. There was one point where my jaw literally hit the ground.
Why don't you tell people that don't know what happened to Craig Carter?
So I'll try to sum it up as spark notes the best I can, and you can help me fill in the details if I miss anything. Essentially, Craig Carter, and very sad, had a gambling addiction. But after going millions and millions and millions of dollars in debt to casinos, to bookies, to whoever, him, another individual who was not named in the case, who is being referred to as CC1, and a Michael Wright had a conspiracy is not the right word. They were basically charged with securities fraud because they were scheming to basically come up with this company that would sell tickets on the secondary market and basically turned it into a Ponzi scheme, going to these big corporations, funds, wealthy individuals. Brandon Marshall was almost one of these people, to get their money to invest in this business, then use that money to pay off their debt, and then essentially, like, just, you know, keep running the money through until, I mean, this is why Ponzi schemes never work. You're eventually going to get caught. I probably did a very poor job of explaining that, but that's the gist of it. They basically ran a Ponzi scheme to try to cover millions of dollars of their gambling debt.
Long story short, Craig Carton told a very rich person, hey, give me some money, I'll invest it in this business.
Yep.
But took the money and paid off his gambling debts.
At least tried to.
Yeah, tried to. And your immediate reaction is, well, didn't he know he'd eventually get caught? Well, yeah, that's why, you know, like you said, these Ponzi schemes don't ever work.
Yeah. It would almost be easier to do it the legitimate way.
Yes.
And you know, make less money in doing so. So yeah, he's canned, and WFAN is beyond fucked. Francesa's retiring at the end of this year. Joe Beningo is leaving as well, so Evan's going to be riding solo. I think he'll hopefully replace Francesa. He's very good. But now Boomer is doing the morning show solo. So WFAN, sup, come hire me. I'm available. Yes. If you want me to do the morning show. And yeah, that's about it. WFAN is fucked. Craig Carton is fucked. And super interesting. I don't know. You never expect it from these guys. And it's you know, the weirdest part about this is that he's the one of the top dogs at WFAN. Obviously, Francesa is number one. I'm pretty sure Francesa makes like $10 million a year, and Carton makes like under $500,000, which is still a lot of money. But you'd think for someone who's millions and millions and millions of dollars in gambling debt, they'd be making more per year. I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, listen, gambling addiction is a very, you know, bad thing, and we're not sitting here making fun of it by any stretch. I mean, if you have gambling issues, get help. But yeah, when the news broke, I was, you know, it's hypocritical because he runs, you know, Carton sits there and he runs these, you know, fundraisers and these charities for these, you know, for police officers, and behind the scenes, he's a criminal.
Yep.
It's like, you know, come on. He sits there and you rip on Kaepernick and guys and people protesting the national anthem and sort of label them as anti-police, anti-America. But here you are robbing Americans of their hard-earned money. So, you know, hopefully justice is served in this case. And man, Carton is fucked.
When the FBI, fucked.
Listen, I always thought three things when in America, you don't fuck with the IRS. You don't mess with underage kids, and you don't fuck with the FBI. Those three things, man. Don't do any of those three things, and you can live the American dream.
That's Weiss's three rules to live by. I'm going to put that on a poster.
Hey, those are the three ways you can ruin your life. I mean, you can sort of you can sort of lump the IRS and the FBI together and come up with the third one. But listen, you don't fuck with the IRS. You don't have the FBI looking over your shoulder. And you don't mess with underage kids, man. Those three things are big no-nos.
Weiss's wise words.
I'm telling you, man. And I don't know anybody that messes with underage kids, by the way. I'm not, it's not like a past experience that I learned from. It's just a word of advice.
Just digging that hole deeper. All right. that's it. Week one. We will speak to you next week. We may have a special episode on Tuesday before we do the normal Wednesday show. Special guest. Not going to say who. Not going to say it's definitely happening, but I'm going to say very likely happening. We'll finalize the details tomorrow and may tease it on Twitter. So stay tuned. That's it. Guys, thank you for tuning in. We'll speak to you next week.
Peace.
Peace.